Sasha, you can unmute Irma, please.
I just unmuted myself. So today is April 25th, 2020, and this is a Zoom class given for 26 Second Avenue, although I'm giving it from North Carolina. And we're going to be reading today from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 1, Text 25. So we can I can't share my screen. Can you let me share my screen? Okay.
Sasha, did you take
I got it.
Do you not
taken care of. I'll take
it. Okay.
Okay. So this is observing the armies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, text 25. Bhishma Drona Pramukata. Bhishma Drona Pramukata. Sarvesham Jamahikshitam. Sarvesham Jamahikshitam. Vachaparta Pasyaitan. Vachaparta Pasyaitan. Samavetan Kuruniti. Samavetan Kuruniti. One more time. Bhishma Drona Pramukata. Bhishma Drona Pramukata. Sarvesham Chamahikshitam. Sarvesham Chamahikshitam. Uvacha Partha Pasyaitan. Uvacha Partha Pasyaitan. Samavetan Kuruniti. Samavetan Kuruniti. Bhishma. Grandfather Bhishma. Drona. The teacher Drona. Pramukata. In front of. Sarvesham. All. Cha. Also. Mahikshitam. Chiefs of the world. Uvacha. Said. Parta, O son of Pritha, Pasya, just behold, Etan, all of them, Samavetan, assembled, Kurun, the members of the Kuru dynasty, Iti, thus. Prabhupada's translation and purport. Translation. In the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. Purport. As the supersoul of all living entities, Lord Krishna could understand what was going on in the mind of Arjuna. The word Rishikesh in this connection, there's no Rishikesh in this verse. Why is Prabhupada saying Rishikesh? And for that we look up at the previous verse, where there we see, right, Evam Yukto Rishikesho. So that Krishna drew up the fine chariot, he's called Rishikesh, so Prabhupada's referring to that here in this purport to 25. The use of the word Rishikesh in this connection indicates that he knew everything. Rishikesh means the master of the senses. And the word Partha, meaning, quote, the son of Pritha or Kunti, unquote, is also similarly significant in reference to Arjuna. As a friend, he wanted to inform Arjuna that because Arjuna was the son of Pritha, the sister of his own father, Vasudev, he had agreed to be the charioteer of Arjuna. Now, what did Krishna mean when he told Arjuna to, quote, behold the Kurus, unquote? Did Arjuna want to stop there and not fight? Krishna never expected such things from the son of his aunt, Pritha. The mind of Arjuna was thus predicted by the Lord in friendly joking. Bhishma Drona Pramukata Sarvesham Cha Mahikshitam Uvacha Partha Pasyai Tan Sama Vetan Kuruniti. In the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. Can you tell me again what time the class is supposed to end?
Yes, approximately 7, if that's okay for you.
Sure, that's fine. Okay, so if we go up a little bit here, go look at the previous verses. This is so much fun that I can just do this on my computer, and you can see it. So going here, this is text 21 to 22, Arjuna says, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see who is present here, who desires to fight, and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. So he wants to see. Arjuna is already saying, I want to see. And here, O infallible one, O Achyuta, Prabhupada talks about how Krishna never fails to carry out the desire of his devotees. So we have Nirikshe, Iksha means eyes, so that I may look upon. And then again we have, let me see who have come here to fight, Avekshe, let me see. And then Krishna, Rishikesh, draws Arjuna's chariot between the armies, and we have today's verse, just behold, just see, and Pasya, just see. And Krishna's telling Arjuna, just see, because, well, Arjuna asked to see. Yes? Srila Prabhupada is pulling primarily from Baladev Vijayabhushan's purport and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport. And both of them comment on 24 and 25 together. So we have where Krishna is called Rishikesh in 24 and Arjuna is called Gurukesh. So both Srila Prabhupada and Baladev Vijayabhushan say Gurukesh means the conqueror of sleep. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Gurukesh is talking about how Arjuna is showing Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva how sweet Krishna is, that Krishna is going to follow the orders of his devotee Arjuna to bring the chariot between the two armies. And then Prabhupada's statement here in the purport about Partha, right here, this is right from Baladev Vijayabhushan's purport, where Baladev Vijayabhushan says that Krishna agrees to drive the chariot because Arjuna is a family member. But he's joking around and saying, wait a minute, didn't you bring me here to fight? You know, what's going on here? So here we have that the Lord was joking. The Lord was joking. He had a mood of affection. Right here, he had a mood of affection with Arjuna. And he has a mood of affection, although Arjuna is about to enter into a state of anxiety, sadness, grief, perplexity, and so forth, particularly being brought on by seeing Bhishma and Drona. And Krishna, Rishikesh, knows that as well. And knowing that Arjuna is going to be, as they say in modern society, triggered by Bhishma and Drona, brings him there specifically. And yet the Lord remains kind to Arjuna. So that's what we're going to be looking at today, that the Lord is smiling at us, he's loving us, he's there with us, even through our periods of greatest difficulty, the periods of greatest challenge. And even though the Lord may, in one sense, set up those challenges, because when Arjuna says, take me between the armies, well, Krishna could have taken him to all kinds of places, but he took him right in front of Bhishma and Drona. Right in front of Bhishma and Drona. Of all of the people with whom Arjuna did not want to fight, these were right at the top. You know, Arjuna's father died when Arjuna was a young child, and he was, practically speaking, raised by Bhishma, who was his great uncle. He was called Grandfather Bhishma, but he never had any. He wasn't actually a father or a grandfather. He'd never had any children of his own. And he acted as the father to the fatherless Pandavas. So from Arjuna's perspective, Bhishma was his loving father, and then Drona was his teacher. And Drona was especially affectionate to Arjuna. Arjuna was his favorite pupil. Arjuna was the one who really imbibed the teachings of Dronacharya. You know, Arjuna, one time he saw his brother Bhima eating in the dark, and he's like, wow, you know, he can find his mouth in the dark, so why can't I find the target in the dark? And so Arjuna started practicing at night. He would go outside and try to shoot a target without being able to see it. And he was so dedicated to his craft of being an archer that he really won the heart of his teacher. They had a very, very close bond. You could say that Dronacharya and Arjuna were closer than Dronacharya and his own biological son, Aswatthama. Aswatthama was even a little upset about that. And he's like, you know, my dear father, why are you showing such affection to Arjuna more than to me? And so Dronacharya said, well, I'll show you. So he brought out all of his students, the Pandavas, the Kurus, whoever else he had there. And he had put a little toy bird up in a tree. And he asked each of his students, come out and get your bow and arrow ready and hit the eye of the bird. And so they'd each come out and they'd aim, and then he'd say, what do you see? And they'd say things like, you know, well, I see the tree, I see the bird, I see your lotus feet, Gurudev, you know, I see the forest. And then he'd say, thank you, sit down. And he's asking each of them, and they're coming up in turn. And then he asks Arjuna, what do you see? And Arjuna says, I see only the eye of the bird. He said, do you see the bird? He said, no, I only see the eye of the bird. And then Dronacharya looked at his own son, Aswatthama, and said, this is why I especially give Arjuna my attention, because not because I have more affection for him out of whim, but because he's really dedicated himself to his craft. In fact, we should all do that. We should all dedicate ourselves to becoming expert in whatever is our service, whether our service is dressing the deities, whether our service is leading kirtan, whether our service is taking care of our family, whatever our service may be, even if our service is picking up the trash, the devotee is supposed to be daksha, the devotee is supposed to be expert. Anyway, so Arjuna had this very deep relationship with Drona and Bhishma. Now, you could say that Drona and Bhishma had wronged Arjuna. Specifically, they had wronged Arjuna at the disrobing of Draupadi. So at the gambling match, when Yudhisthira, because the game wasn't fair, Shakuni was cheating. So because Yudhisthira kept losing and losing and losing at gambling, and he kept gambling more and more and more, and eventually he gambled away his brothers, who then became the slaves of the Kurus, and finally he gambled away his wife, Draupadi. And then when Draupadi was dragged into the assembly hall by Dushasan, and she asked all of the leaders, she said, how can my husband gamble me when he already lost himself? He already became a slave, he wagered himself, he became a slave, then he had no more rights over me to gamble me. And how is it proper? How can you gamble away your wife? You know, I can't have been lost in a gambling bed. I'm not a piece of property. But none of the elders would answer her. Bhishma just looked down, and Drona looked down, and only Vidura said something. You know, they just said, this is not my responsibility. This is the responsibility of Dhritarashtra, the king. It's the responsibility of Yudhisthira, the husband. And we're not going to get involved. You know, we sometimes think like that. There's some problem in a family, and we just say, you know, it's the family's problem. We're not going to get involved. We're not going to give an opinion. We're not going to say anything. And that's what Bhishma and Drona did. I mean, Srila Prabhupada said they did that because they felt obligated to the Kurus. You know, the Kurus were maintaining them. And so they naturally felt some sense of gratitude and obligation. So on the basis of that incident, you could say that Arjuna was within his rights to kill Bhishma and Drona. But he was forgiving. A Vaishnava is naturally forgiving, and a Vaishnava is naturally compassionate. And even an ordinary person may not put aside a lifetime of a loving relationship over one incident. I mean, in our dealings with people that we love, people in our family and so forth, we're not necessarily going to cut off our relationship with them. What to speak of try to kill them on the basis of one difficulty. And devotees are especially like this. Vaishnavas are especially like this. So Arjuna, his mood, we'll see as we go on in this chapter, his mood was, even if they're wrong, why should I do the wrong thing? You know, I should be forgiving. I shouldn't offer my authorities even a verbal fight, what to speak of a physical fight. But particularly that, I mean, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says that Krishna says, you know, it's not in the verses, it's Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, that Krishna says, well, I can see that you don't want to kill your elders, you don't want to kill Bhishma and Drona, but why not just kill the sons of Dhritarashtra? But it was particularly, I mean, Arjuna didn't even want to kill them because he didn't want to cause pain to Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. But it was especially Bhishma and Drona. Of everybody assembled on the battlefield of, you know, we're going to see in the next verse, fathers and fathers-in-law and sons and brothers and cousins, but especially Bhishma and Drona, Arjuna did not want to fight them. And again, this is would be natural for everyone. So we see that Krishna took Arjuna right in front of Bhishma and Drona. Right in front of Bhishma and Drona. And I think we can say, if we've been in spiritual life for a while, I think we all have the experience that Krishna puts us in situations where we're facing head-on our greatest attachments and our greatest tests. And what's our greatest attachments and tests, of course, changes as we progress in Krishna consciousness. They get more and more subtle, or they get more, the things that we're more and more attached to. At every moment, it feels like it's the biggest test. Like I remember a few years ago, I was speaking, I think it was in the Middle East, and somebody said, you know, what do I do now that I've taken up Krishna consciousness? A lot of my family and friends don't want to be with me anymore. How do I deal with these relatives and friends who don't support my Krishna consciousness? And I had a momentary thought of, well, that's not really a big issue. You know, why is it such a big issue for you? And then immediately I remembered that there was a point in my spiritual journey when that was a huge issue for me. There was a time when the attitude of family and friends who weren't devotees was just a devastating obstacle in my spiritual life. And I thought, well, you know, it's not anymore. It's something that really isn't an issue anymore for me. But at the time, it was a huge test. So one after another, Krishna puts before us what is in that moment our greatest test. And, you know, it may sound awful that once we go through that test, then we get, you know, our reward for going through the test is getting another test that's even more difficult or more subtle or more deep. You know, we may think, oh, great, you know, my reward for passing the test is getting another test. But that's what it's like, you know, even in ordinary school. In ordinary school, your reward for passing second grade is you get to go to third grade, where the work is more challenging. You know, it's how it works. So we all have this experience that we come to Krishna consciousness and we're like, yes, I'm going to get rid of my false ego. I'm going to surrender to Krishna, you know. I'm going to get rid of Maya. That Maya, it's so awful. It's just terrible. And then Krishna says, okay, here's your personal Maya. Here's your personal Maya. You know, Krishna also presents himself, even for the beginning devotee, and as a kind of servant, as a kind of chariot driver. that we're saying, you know, Krishna, please help me in my spiritual life. Please guide me on the right path. Please take me where you think I should go. Please help me. Please give me intelligence. And very much like Arjuna saying, you know, please let me go between the armies. And Krishna's like, okay, let me take you to the place where you have to face that which you're attached to, where you have to face that which is really pulling you away from me. Now, of course, it's very interesting that Bhishma and Drona would be pulling Arjuna away from Krishna, because Bhishma is one of the Mahajanas, and he's one of the 12 great personalities that's mentioned by Yamaraj in the 6th canto of the Bhagavatam. And we have this famous verse, Mahajanayena Gatasvapanta, that it's, you're not going to understand spiritual life just by reading the scriptures or just by logic, but by following the Mahajanas. And Bhishma is one of them. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. You know, soon after the battle of Kurukshetra, in the presence of the Lord, he attains his swarup and he goes to the spiritual world. And Dronacharya is also a great devotee, probably a pure devotee of the Lord. So these are devotees. Why should we want to kill devotees? You know, why would that be an obstacle? It seems like it would be a good thing, part of Arjuna's bhakti, that he doesn't want to fight with great devotees, with the Mahajanas, and his guru. Dronacharya is his guru. Bhishma is, as a great uncle, as a grandfather, Bhishma is practically like a guru. I mean, even in materialistic society, to kill your father, to kill your teacher, is a much more heinous crime than to kill a stranger, or to kill someone who has no, you're not beholden to. You know, if somebody goes into a shop and kills somebody and steals their money, it's not as serious a crime as if they go into their parents' home and shoot their parents and take their parents' money. And it's not on the same level as a crime. So you would think, you know, why? And Arjuna, of course, makes these arguments that why should I kill these people who are worthy of my worship? You know, I'm thinking about in the 6th canto of the Bhagavatam, where Indra and the demigods are attacked by Vritrasura. And Vritrasura is basically going to destroy the worlds. He's this ugly, fearsome demon. But he's actually a devotee. He's actually a pure devotee who was Chitraketu in his previous life. And Indra, once he realizes that Vritrasura is a great devotee, he's very hesitant to kill him. Vritrasura, in fact, has to encourage him. Please kill me, please kill me. And it's interesting that Indra was told by the priests before fighting with Vritrasura that, don't worry, we know Vritrasura is actually a saintly person. He's just externally a demon. And after you kill him, we'll do a horse sacrifice for you and get rid of your sins. And the acharyas explain, I think it was Jiva Goswami, who explains that because the Brahmanas told Indra that as far as Indra was concerned, it wasn't sinning on the strength of chanting, because he was directed in this way by the priests. But even so, Indra had to suffer for a long time because of killing Vritrasura. He was hiding in the stem of a lotus flower where he was practically starving, and personified sin was coming after. I mean, it was a heavy thing that Indra had to suffer for a very, 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 very long time for killing Vritrasura. Even though Vritrasura, unlike Bhishma and Drona, was apparently a demon and attacking the world. So why would it be a material attachment on Arjuna's part to have compassion for Bhishma and Drona? And of course, that's very deep and something that's gone into in depth in the Bhagavad Gita. But basically, because it comes down to the fact that Krishna wanted the Pandavas to win, Krishna wanted the Pandavas to rule, he didn't want the Kurus to rule, and Bhishma and Drona were supporting the Kurus. I mean, it really came down to such a simple thing as that. And of course, Bhishma and Drona went back to Godhead. I mean, it wasn't like Bhishma and Drona were going to be put into difficulty. So anyway, Arjuna had all these very, very reasonable reasons for his attachment to Bhishma and Drona. And we all have reasonable reasons for all of our attachments, whatever they may be, whether we're attached to our parents, to our children, to our spouse, to our animals, to our house, to our money, whatever we're attached to. You know, we always have good reasons, and we always have reasons that we can justify with something from Shastra, or we can justify with common sense, or that we've made to ourselves why we are taking something and making it God for us. Why we are elevating something or someone, some activity, some object above God. You know, reading from this one Christian author about how Brant Hansen, how in America the Christians are all, you know, family values, family values. But Jesus said, one who loves his mother or father more than me is not worthy of me. And he was saying, you know, the love of the parents for the children, it's a beautiful thing. But if you idolize it, if it becomes your Krishna, you know, if we're willing to die for the family, we're willing to let the world blow up, but we'll save our family, then it becomes an impediment. If we're investing our emotions in anything other than Krishna, anything, anyone other than Krishna, then it becomes an impediment. It's not real. I mean, that may sound very hard-hearted, but Srila Prabhupada gives the example all the time that we put food in our mouth. You know, the only time that a person eats through some other method is if they're very sick. You know, in reading about this COVID-19, so people who get put on a ventilator, they have to be heavily sedated, you know, because you have this tube going through your throat. And so if you're not sedated, it'll hurt, you know, and you'll try to pull it out and so many things. So they have to put people under heavy sedation, and then how are they going to feed them? So they stick a tube right in their stomach to put food directly in their stomach. You know, they put an IV line in their vein to give them liquids, and then they put a tube in their stomach to give them some kind of liquefied food, and then they have to put another tube in to catch the urine and so forth. Right? But that's not normally how we eat. We don't normally eat by sticking a tube in our stomach. You know, you can also feed somebody with a tube through the nose, you know. Sometimes they give nutrition up from the anus. But that's not normally how we eat. Right? That means that we're really sick. It's not that somebody says, well, you know, for fun, I'm just going to cut a hole in my belly and stick a tube in my belly. So normally we eat through the mouth, and when we eat through the mouth, the whole body is nourished. And as soon as we try to nourish the body separately, it doesn't work. You know, it's interesting that a lot of modern cosmetics are made out of things that are normally food. You know, you can buy face creams and shampoos and skin creams that are made out of things like honey and avocado, and, right? I'm sure you've seen that kind of stuff, pineapple. And many, many years ago, I remember reading that some shampoo smelled so much like food and flowers that when people used it, they were being followed by bees. You know, so they had to take it off the market. And, you know, food is meant to nourish your hair and your skin by being put in your mouth. So when we love Krishna, we love everyone. It's not a hard-hearted thing. It's not that when I put Krishna first, then I don't love Bhishma and Drona. It doesn't work like that. You know, when we were meeting, I tell this story all the time, when we were meeting with Srila Prabhupada in 1976 in New York, and our oldest son was about a year and a half, so he was sitting on my lap, and my father asked Srila Prabhupada, actually first Prabhupada looked at me, and he said, just like this mother is loving this child without expectation of return, in the same way we should love Krishna. And then my father said, will loving her child help her to love Krishna? And Prabhupada said, no. So, but loving Krishna will help her to love her son. So when we get it right, we love Krishna first, and by loving Krishna, we love everyone else. When we get it wrong, we try to love people separately from Krishna. We try to make Krishna just one person among the many. Okay, I have my religion, I love God, that's my religion, that's over there. Then I love my family, that's over there. I have my job, that's over there. I have my hobby, that's over there. I have my recreation, that's over there. I have, you know, my citizenship, patriotism, it's over there. These are all just pieces. They're not integrated. And maybe, you know, maybe I train my family in religious life. You know, for we Hare Krishna devotees, I have a kirtan together, whatever. But it's still separate. That's my God and that's my family. And when we do that, then our attachments, I mean, here specifically we're talking about family because Arjuna's attachment is for family, but whatever the attachment may be for an animal, the attachment may be for a computer or a car, the attachment may be for a friend, the attachment may be for your country, you know, for whatever. I mean, there's so many things we can become attached to. When I try to enjoy that separately from Krishna, it becomes a source of pain. Like if I try to put food in my ear, you know, I'm just going to end up getting sick. And we see this. We see that everything, everyone we get attached to separately from Krishna causes us pain. We hurt them, they hurt us. We do something wrong, say something wrong, it hurts their feelings. They do something that hurts our feelings. Maybe they cheat us, maybe they betray us. Ultimately they die. Or we die. Or it gets broken. Or something. And we're left brokenhearted. Yes? Because we're trying to put something on someone that's wrong. So Arjuna was doing this. Of course, whereas we can say Arjuna was doing this by the will of the Lord, so Bhagavad Gita would be spoken. But looking at it in its most basic form, Arjuna was doing this. He was prioritizing his family members, his family relationship, his family loyalties, his gratitude to his family over his relationship with Krishna. Now, this can be very misunderstood. I've seen devotees become very hard-hearted towards family members or toward themselves, toward their friends, try to cut off their natural feelings, try to cut off their emotions. I'm just going to be for Krishna. That's not right either. You know, it's actually, Rupa Goswami says, the qualification for taking up bhakti is you're not too attached or too detached. And overall, Krishna prefers that people are attached to each other and take care of each other. Society works a lot better if people are loving with each other, even if it's material. You know, I've often asked audiences of devotees, if the only change that happened in the world, you woke up tomorrow morning and the only thing that changed is that every married couple loved each other and was nice to each other all over the world. Nothing else changed, just that. And everyone would be like, wow, that would be huge. That would be such a big ripple effect all over the world. So Krishna would rather that husbands and wives be too attached to each other and that parents and children be too attached to each other. If they're going to be in Maya, he'd rather that kind of Maya. It keeps the world going. But that's not going to help us spiritually to be too attached, and it's not going to help us spiritually to be too detached. Rather, we want to become attached to Krishna, and because we love Krishna, we love everyone as a service. We love everyone as a service in relationship to Krishna. And in this particular case, Arjuna's love for Bhishma and Drona, unfortunately, was to fight with them. That's not what's generally expected of us. So Krishna, again, he put Arjuna right in front of Bhishma and Drona. There was a huge army, millions and millions of people. Take me between the two armies. He could have taken him right in front of Duryodhana. He could have taken him in front of, you know, Dushasana. I mean, the Pandavas really hated Dushasana, who had dragged Draupadi in by her hair. Bhima had made a vow to take out the heart of Dushasana. I mean, they really didn't like Dushasana. So if Krishna just, you know, wanted Arjuna to glide over, or just take him in front of Dushasana. No, he took him in front of Bhishma and Drona. So why does Krishna do that? Krishna does that because unless we face our deep attachments, we're not even aware that they're there. We can go on in our spiritual life thinking, yes, I'm chanting, I love kirtan, and I love japa, and I love offering my food, and taking prasadam, and reading the books, and I am so spiritual. You know, there's so many times when I've thought, oh, I am so spiritual. I am so Krishna conscious. I am so advanced. And then Krishna says, okay, well, you know, let's look at this thing here. And then all of a sudden you realize I'm not so advanced. You know, Arjuna, when he looks at Bhishma and Drona, we'll see as the chapter goes on, you know, he starts crying. His bow falls out of his hand. He basically just can't function anymore. He just can't function. So Krishna put Arjuna in that situation, and then he's saying, just behold. So Arjuna, you just wanted to see? I mean, really, the battle was supposed to have already begun. The conch shells are already blown. It was time to start the battle. And in those days, people played generally by the rules, and so when everyone saw that Krishna and Arjuna went in between the two armies, they didn't fight yet. Okay, we're going to wait. It's like Krishna saying indirectly, wait a minute, Arjuna, you're supposed to tell me where to go to start shooting your arrows, not where to go to just see. So Krishna was also bringing this out in Arjuna, this hesitancy. Right? Don't we also have this? We'll say, Krishna, I want to surrender tomorrow. Krishna, I offer you everything you can do with my life, whatever you want, but not my phone. Don't take my phone. You know, whatever it is. You know, as I'm getting old, it starts to be, don't take my mind. Don't give me Alzheimer's or dementia, you know. Whatever else you want, you can do anything you want with me, but, you know, don't do that. Or don't put me in a wheelchair. Whatever you want, I surrender, but I have these fine print in the contract. You know, so it's kind of like that, where Arjuna is, he's supposed to be going, okay, Lord, let's go. Can I just see? Can I take, Arjuna already knew who was there. This fight had been prepared for decades. He didn't have to go see. You know, he's procrastinating, right? We ever procrastinated? Time to do something and you're like, yeah, okay, well, now I have that really important email that I have to answer. And, yeah, I need to drink some more water. I haven't drank enough water today. And, oh, look, the plants need watering too. I gotta go. Yeah, so it was like that. Can I just see who's there? And Krishna said, I just want to see. So bringing him to Drona and Bhishma and saying, you just want to see. And Arjuna's about to go through this huge trial of attachment. It's not the only trial that Arjuna goes through in his life. And he's going to go through quite a few during the battle itself. Perhaps the greatest will be the unfair killing of his son Abhimanyu, where Arjuna just gets drowned in grief and he precipitously takes his vow that I'm going to kill Dryajath by sunset tomorrow or else I'm going to commit suicide. And then Krishna's like, you know, you shouldn't take those kind of vows without asking me first. You know, it puts me in trouble. But anyway, so Arjuna goes through other difficulties as well, other trials, you know, before this, after this. But in this case, what's really significant here is not just how Krishna sets up Arjuna by putting him in front of Bhishma and Drona and by saying, oh, you're just going to look, but that it's very friendly, that Krishna remains friendly. He remains friendly. He remains as Arjuna's chariot driver. I mean, the implication here, which is picked up, of course, by Baladeva Vijayabhushana in his commentary and that Srila Prabhupada refers to here, is Krishna saying, you know, I'm your charioteer because we're family. Which is kind of funny because Krishna's dealing with family attachment, Arjuna's family attachment. But he's indicating, you know, you're my father's sister and that's why I'm driving your chariot. Even if you're not going to fight, Arjuna, if you're just going to look at the army, you know, I'm here because I'm family. But ultimately, of course, Krishna's not there because he's family. I mean, that's there in an eternal sense of rasa. But Krishna's there with all of us. Right? Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Riddesha Arjuna Chisati Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantra Virani Maya. The yantra, the machine, the vehicle. This body is a vehicle, and that there's the comparison is made. I'm sure you've all seen the painting in the Bhagavad Gita that the body is like a chariot, right? The horses are like the senses, the reins are the mind, the driver is the intelligence, the passenger is the soul. So we're in also a chariot. We have our own metaphorical battles. We have our own seeming enemies with other people or with various difficult, with diseases, with government, with various obstacles. We have our own difficulties to face. We have our own attachments to face. We have our own Bhijmas and Dronas in our life. Again, whether they're another person or whether they're an object or whether they're an activity or a place or whatever we're attached to that Krishna puts in front of us. But he remains with us. He very much remains with us. And in one sense, as the super soul in our heart, he's also in one sense the driver. It's explained in the Bhagavatam that without the super soul seeing, without the super soul hearing, without the super soul touching, tasting, smelling, we can't do these things. And it's explained in the Gita, especially in the 5th and 13th chapter, that we're not really doing anything in this world. We're really just observing and desiring. Something like people playing a video game, you know, they're taking their mouse and, or I don't know if they even make joysticks anymore, but they're taking some apparatus and they're manipulating the character in the game, but they're not really doing what the character's doing. You know, the character's jumping and running and whatever they're doing. But the player is sitting in a seat and just manipulating some piece of hardware and software. The player is observing and the player is desiring. So in a similar way, we, the soul, are simply observing and desiring. And Krishna, understanding our desires as Krishna understands the desires of Arjuna, he's allowing us, you know, he's allowing me to lift my hand, he's allowing me to eat something, he's allowing me to go places, and to make it appear that I'm the doer. Now, for the devotee, Krishna does take us into situations where we need to face and deal with our various material attachments. And he does that because we're asking him to become purified and we're asking him to love him and we're asking to go back to him and we're saying we want to get rid of our false ego. So therefore he's saying, well, here's some of it, let's deal with it. Here's some of it, let's deal with it. But the whole time, he loves us. He's smiling at us. It may seem sometimes in our struggles, in our difficulties, you know, we don't always come out of our difficulties in 2 seconds. I mean, Arjuna didn't. It wasn't that Arjuna saw Bhishma and Drona and said, yep, okay, let's go. He fell apart. Arjuna really fell apart. He didn't do very well in the beginning. He really didn't do very well, and he became bewildered. Krishna said, how have these impurities come upon you? You know, it took Arjuna a while. And even once he started coming out of it, you know, he had all these doubts. How did you talk to Vivaswan? And why are you telling me contradictory instructions? You know, it was a while before Arjuna said, now all my illusion is gone and I'm prepared to act according to your instructions. That wasn't immediate. But Krishna was there. Krishna was there, Krishna was smiling, Krishna was loving, Krishna was patient. Prabhupada says at the end of Bhagavad Gita when the Lord says, so Arjuna, are all your illusions now dispelled? Are you prepared to act according to my instructions? Prabhupada says there in the purport that Krishna was prepared to repeat the whole Bhagavad Gita if necessary. You know, as a teacher of children, that's a very common thing, that you give a child an instruction and they don't understand it, and you have to repeat it. And you may have to repeat it in 5 different ways, 5 different times. You may have to repeat it in 10 different ways, 10 different times. So Krishna was willing to do that. And I mean, just like even an ordinary parent, if the child is, you know, screaming and yelling and throwing things, and even if the child says, you know, I don't like you, mommy, because you're not letting me eat my cookie before my meal, the parent is still loving. The parent is still giving. The parent doesn't leave the child. The parent doesn't say, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to have anything to do with you anymore. So Krishna is also like that. Krishna is always with us. He's always smiling. Whether we're stuck in attachment, you know, we get attached to somebody and then we're like, or something, and it prevents us from actually becoming Krishna conscious. And even though we say we want to be Krishna conscious, and Krishna's there with us. You know, he's there with us as we go through our various attachments. He doesn't leave. Even when we're having a meltdown, I can't give up this attachment, no, I can't do it, oh, Krishna, I can't do it, oh, I just can't do it, I can't give up this attachment, oh my God, I can't give it, what am I? That's what Arjuna did, he fell apart, and Krishna's still there, it's alright, I love you. It's alright, I love you. And when we're stuck in the indecision, I don't know what to do, should I, if I fight, it's not going to work out, if I don't fight, it's not going to work out, and maybe I'll live by begging, and I don't know what to do, and and Krishna's still there. He loves us, and he's still smiling. Or when we get angry with Krishna, I mean, Arjuna was like, "Why are you giving me these bad instructions?" He's saying, "Why are you inducing me to this horrible warfare? You're telling me give up all abominable activities, and then you're telling me to do this horrible war? What kind of instruction is that? You're giving me equivocal instruction. Saying one thing over here and you're saying another thing over there. And you're the husband of the goddess of fortune. Why are you inducing me to do something that will bring me only misfortune?" And we do this too. We say, "Well, who are you? What kind of a god are you? Why did you let my wife die? Why did you have all my money lost in the stock market? You know, why did my daughter turn against me? Why did the town president yell at me? What kind of god are you? I gave you my life." And Krishna's still there. You know, we might not be like that. If we have some friend, and our friend is ignoring us, and our friend is betraying us, which is what we do to Krishna, you know, I might not be there for them. I've cut myself off from people. There are people in my life who just, gosh, you know, you try to give them good instructions. I mean, I just know people where that they ask me for advice, and I give them advice, and they don't follow it. And then, you know, 2 months later, they ask me for the same advice, and they don't follow it. And there was one devotee that I finally said, "Look, why don't you make a table? Why don't you make a chart of everything you've asked me and everything I've answered, what you've actually done, and what was the result? And let's see what you've actually done to follow my advice before you ask me for more advice, or before you tell me the advice hasn't worked." Right? I mean, at a certain point with people like that, we're kind of, I don't really know if I want to say anything anymore. I don't really know if I want to be there for them anymore. We certainly don't feel loving anymore. Just like, oh, here's that pest again, asking me the same thing they've asked me for the last 20 years, and they never listen to what I say, and they just come back and ask again. But Krishna's not like that. Krishna's not rolling his eyes, you know? Or if people betray me, "Oh, I'll be there for you, I'll be loyal to you," and then they turn around and turn on me. You know, and then I'm like, "Oh, forget that person." And Krishna's not like that. He's not like that. He stays with the living entity in the heart. I have to say, you know, how Krishna stays in the heart even of really nasty, nasty creatures. I mean, if you think about, like, right here in North Carolina, we have a lot of poison ivy, poison sumac, poison oak. There's a place that I walk every day, and I see, oh, that's poison ivy. So there's some jiva who's taken the body of a poison ivy plant. Poison ivy, you know, that's pretty nasty. Touch me, and I will make you itch for 3 weeks. You know, it's, think of the mentality of the jiva who takes a body like that. You know, don't touch me. You'll suffer for a long time. And even though they're so nasty and they're so envious, I mean, what am I doing to the plant? I'm just walking past it. And still Krishna's in their heart. And Krishna stays in their heart, and Krishna loves them. And he's there for them, but especially for the devotee. Especially for the devotee. If Krishna's like that for the jiva in a poison ivy plant, and he's like that for the jiva in the mosquito body, and the, you know, tick body, and the rattlesnake body, but what to speak of for his devotee, who's trying to love him, who's trying to surrender, who wants to surrender. So when that devotee goes through attachment that he's struggling with, when that devotee goes through indecision that he's struggling with, when that devotee even goes through getting angry at Krishna and blaming Krishna and arguing with Krishna, Krishna's still there as a friend. You know, that's ultimately what we want to know, isn't it? What we really, really want to know is, does God love me? Does God love me even with all of my problems and all of my failings? I mean, that's what we're looking for in another jiva, isn't it? We're looking for another jiva, you know, a really good friend or a romantic partner or whatever. We're looking for another jiva, that's why people get dogs, who's going to love me regardless. They're going to know the things I do good, but they're not going to think that I'm Superman. And they're going to know what I do bad, and they're not going to think that I'm a demon. And they're going to love me when I do the right thing, and they're going to love me when I do the wrong thing, and they're just going to be there for me. Unfortunately, in other jivas, we don't find that 100%. You know, we just don't. But that's what we're looking for, and that's what Krishna actually is. He never stops loving us. He never leaves us. He never stops being available to us. No matter how sinful we are, no matter how fallen we are, no matter how offensive we are, no matter how many mistakes we make, no matter how poorly we deal with our mistakes, he's always ready. Prabhupada said he's giving us a chance imperceptibly 24 hours. And it's a real shame that in so many of the religions of the world, God is not understood like this. In an effort to get people to behave morally, which is something that Krishna wants, he wants people to behave morally, but in an effort to get people to behave morally, they present God as this tyrant, you know, as a tyrant dictator. Believe in me and serve me or you'll be punished forever. You know, it's like, And we all know in our heart of hearts that we're not good enough. You know, so then it just becomes a matter of fear. Oh, God knows everything I've ever thought and everything I've ever done, and how can I ever be good enough? You know, and that, it's really a shame. So yes, there's a law of karma. Yes, if you do sinful things, you'll suffer. Yes, we have to give up our material attachments. That's all true. But Krishna never stops loving us and never stops helping us, no matter what we go through, especially if we're trying to love him. Therefore, he says, apichet sucharacharo. If someone's trying to love me, if someone's trying to serve me, even if they do something wrong, really wrong, it's okay. They're my devotee. I'm there for them. I still love them, and I'm going to help them. And once we really get this, then we want to surrender to Krishna, not because we're afraid of suffering in this world, not because we're afraid of illusion in this world, not because we're worried about karma, or not because we're convinced intellectually that I should surrender to God, but we really want to surrender to Krishna because he's exactly what we want. Because surrendering to him, as Prabhupada would say, is really in our own best interests. It's everything that we want, that all of our desires will be fulfilled if we just simply accept Bhoktiram Yagatapasam Sarvalok Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatram Amisham Chirichit. If we just accept he's the controller, he's the enjoyer, he's the best friend, that I'm not going to lose anything by surrendering. Because he already knows me. He already knows everything I've ever done, everything I've ever thought, everything I've ever wanted. And he still loves me and he's still there for me. And he's ready to give me himself. He's ready to give me himself. He's ready to be my best friend, my child, my lover, my everything. So we have some time for questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. However you want to do this.
Hey, Krishna, I have a question.
Yes.
Thank you for that class. I was thinking, so if Arjuna initially saw this battle as a test, and then approached it like, this is something that I have to accomplish because it's a test, you know, and I have to pass. But he didn't necessarily listen to those emotions within his own heart, and just felt external pressure to pass the test. If he had gone forward, it probably would have been a disaster, you know, if that makes any sense. So I was kind of wondering, is this an example of Arjuna failing an initial test? Or are there situations in which Krishna initially might give us more than we can handle? And also, what examples can we see of devotees failing tests? And, you know, I guess the idea of a test sort of connotes like a grade.
Hmm.
And a potential, you know, in an academic setting, you know, failing a course, you know. So not necessarily a situation where we have eternal chances. So those are just a bunch of different things that are running around my head.
Okay, well, even if you fail a course, in most cases you can go back to school and you can retake the course. But the purpose of these tests is for ourselves, not for Krishna. In an ordinary school, the test is to give the teacher information and to give the student information. The tests that Krishna gives us are only to give us information, because he already knows what we're able to do and what we're not able to do. Does Krishna sometimes put people in situations where he knows they're going to struggle? Oh, definitely. You know, he has us face the things that we haven't yet faced. He definitely does that. Now, of course, everything that Krishna has us face, we have the capability of dealing with it, or he wouldn't have given it to us. But it is going to be a challenge. So do devotees ever fail tests? Well, if you want to count the demigods as devotees, then certainly. I mean, we have Indra failing a number of tests. Indra failed the test with the Govardhan Lila. He failed the test when Krishna took the Parijata tree from the heavenly planets, right after returning Indra's mother's earrings and, I think, umbrella, which is what Indra had requested. And right after that, then he took a tree and you know, Indra forgot that how grateful he was to Krishna and so forth. So we definitely have that. We definitely have examples of demigods failing tests. I mean, we have, perhaps on a subtle level, it was just Gadadhar Pandit's appearance day. We have Gadadhar Pandit, who was feeling very critical of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And, you know, you could say that was a kind of a failure of a test, and then he could understand Pundarik Vidyanidhi's actual position. and immediately he repented. And we have Pundarik Vijayaniti himself, who became very critical on seeing that Jagannath Balaram and Subhadra were given an unwashed piece of cloth when it became wintertime. And he was critical in his mind, for which he had a dream where Jagannath and Balaram were slapping him. Now, I think your other question, if I can understand it correctly, is if Arjuna wasn't honest with himself about these feelings and doubts he had about Drona and Bhishma particularly, and if he just kind of pushed through it and went on to fight, would that have been a good idea? No, certainly not. But those aren't the only two choices. It's not that the only choice is to ignore how you feel and repress it and just try to push through it and, you know, pretend it's not there and soldier on, quite literally here as a soldier, or, you know, to break down. And often we think those are the choices. We think the choices are, I pretend there isn't a problem, I'm not in touch with how I really feel about a situation, I don't express how I really feel about a situation, and I just pretend everything's all right and I just push on, or I admit how I feel and I just fall apart. And in this case, Arjuna just fell apart. But those aren't the only two choices. There's other choices. And the choice that Krishna keeps bringing up throughout the Bhagavad Gita is that you don't identify with this world. You don't identify with those emotions. And this is something that's taught, interestingly, at the present time, very widely in the world, mostly by people who are connected with Buddhism. But this concept that you don't have to either let your emotions control you, the good emotions or the bad emotions, if we want to categorize them like that, nor do you need to just, you know, be a stoic. But you can observe the emotions and let them go through you. You know, and as I say, this is something that is becoming very popular in the world in terms of meditation and mindfulness, and see yourself as the observer, and instead of saying, I am angry, which makes anger your identity, like, you know, it's, I am Swiss, you know, I am French, I am American, oh, I am angry. So, you know, identifying, or even I feel angry, but to just say, oh, you know, there's anger going through my body, there's anger going through my mind, there's sadness going through my mind, and I'm just observing it as it comes and goes. So this concept is there in all religious traditions, that that's an option. And Krishna talks about that in the Gita, right? He says, Martha sparshas tu kante asitos na sukadukada agamal payano nishas samsatiksha subharata. And titiksha, tolerating, doesn't mean I'm tolerating the anger and I want to punch you, but I'm not punching you because I'm tolerating it. It doesn't mean like that. You know, I'm not going to cry. I'm just not going to cry. It's not that kind of toleration, but it's just, oh, you know, there's grief. There's indecision. There's joy. There's, you know, happiness, distress, honor and dishonor, heat and cold, fame and infamy. Oh, right now everybody's praising me. Oh, now everybody's discrediting me. Oh, you know, right now people love me. Now they hate me. Oh, now it's too cold. Now it's too hot. Now I'm happy. Now I'm sad. And these things are just, they're just passing through. They're not really touching me. I'm not really happy. I'm not really sad. Happiness is going through the body. Sadness is going through the body. Fame, honor, now dishonor and infamy. And these are just passing things. And my real, you know, my real happiness is within. My real happiness is that I'm the soul. So that's the other alternative. And that's the alternative, you know, that Krishna comes to in the Bhagavad Gita. Not, you know, he gives other alternatives, that for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death, and so forth. But that's what he is emphasizing, this third way. Not repression, not expression, but to be detached. And to be detached, not just as a blank, you know, not in the Buddhist sense, but he's saying in the sixth chapter that you see the self by the pure mind and you relish and rejoice in the self, and in that state you will not be shaken even by the greatest miseries. So if Arjuna, and of course Arjuna could have done that, he was already, He was already a great devotee and a liberated soul. It's not that he couldn't have acted on that platform, but because Krishna wanted to speak the Bhagavad Gita to reinstate Dharma, therefore Arjuna basically agreed to play that role. You know, and to what extent he was actually feeling that way is not, it's not something that's above my pay grade. But he was agreeing to pay that, to play that role. I don't think he was just acting. Out of love for Krishna. Anybody else? Thank you very much. I hope I get everything.
Yeah, it was perfect. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Dandavat Pranam.
Dandavat
Pranam. It was a beautiful class. I liked it. And I like the thing everybody asks that Krishna always loves. You know, through our struggle and everything, sometimes, yeah, we are not perfect, but we forget that Krishna loves us. Mm. Thank you for remembering that, for always, you know, in the whole class, you came to that point several times, and I really liked it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I think there was a question that was sent by chat. Do you see that, Mataji?
Trying to see how I can get to the chat.
If you can't see it, then I'll just read. I can read it for you.
Well, usually I can see the chat, but I don't know.
So on the bottom of the Zoom screen, there's a little horizontal panel.
It seems to come and go. Let me stop sharing. Okay, if I stop sharing, then I see it. Okay, now I see a chat. All right. What are some practical advice or actions we can do to chip away at our reluctance to surrender to Krishna? Well, one thing we can do is we can spend time with people who are more surrendered than we are. And that gives us faith, it gives us impetus, it gives us a model. And we can also try to surrender, oh, some little thing here and there. Well, that gives us some faith that if I let go of some little thing, and Krishna takes care of me, then I gain faith that if I surrender the next thing, Krishna will take care of me. I can also remember something that I've surrendered in the past, and that, you know, I'm okay. And Krishna took care of me, and life went on. You know, my life didn't get finished because I surrendered to Krishna. Any other questions?
Susan, don't you have a question?
I don't have a question. I thought it was so heartwarming to hear her talk about Krishna. And I felt comforted because I had my dinner with us today. I know that I'm not going to be knowing that he is this coward.
Maybe you could just type it into a chat.
Did you hear it?
No, the sound's really distorted. Could you just type it into a chat?
Yes. You'll have to wait, okay?
Okay, well, I don't see anything. Is there anyone else before we stop? It's just about 7 o'clock. Oh, here we go. You find yourself being no good, but knowing of Krishna's love comforts me. Excellent. Wonderful, wonderful. Okay. So I think it's 7 o'clock. We should end here. Yes, Atmanivedanam Prabhu?
Oh, sure. This is a good time to close. Thank you very much, Amrila, for giving a very nice, leading a very nice discussion in Bhagavad Gita. I'm sure everyone appreciated very much. Irmala, I didn't introduce properly. I'm not, it's this new world order here, so I'm out of sorts with my regular schedule, but I can do it afterwards instead, so why not?
I'll tell you why not, because the main purpose of an introduction is to give people faith in the speaker so that they'll listen attentively.
That's great, Mataji.
That's the only purpose of an introduction. There's no other purpose. So
if anybody
still wants to know something about me, you can just go to my website, armiladevidasi.org, and I have a biography there.
I just have a question for everyone. Would you be interested if Irmala was to come back and give class again in the future? If so, if you're on video, raise your hand. Okay, so given that, so to keep you interested for next time that Irmala comes, per her explanation of the value of an introduction, I can introduce her for the next time. So Irmala is a great, she's an author, she's been teaching children and teaching how to teach children, running schools, and she has she teaches individuals on a personal level to guide them from the beginning of spiritual life to going back to Godhead, and she's one of the earlier disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And she's very inspiring to many, many devotees of Krishna. And, of course, my little intro certainly doesn't cover all her degree achievements she has during her Krishna conscious many years. But I appreciate so much about her. So we look forward to having you come back, and I'll email you after seeing when we can arrange for that.
Okay. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
Hare Krishna. So now we'll do a little kirtan. So in case you weren't here when we started, the kirtan will be led by Devavan. And everyone will be muted while he's chanting, but just like you were to do in a kirtan in a temple, it's nice if you chant in response to when he chants, every other line, Krishna consciousness.